It's time for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Welcome to today's episode of the Coaching Perspective. Hi, Paul. Glad we're on the air.
Yeah, and sorry we got you a little late today here. Just a little, running a little too tight on everything here.
You know, a couple minutes isn't going to change the world for us. But hey, our topic today could change the world. It's all about challenges in executive coaching, and maybe even more specifically about lessons learned from coaching leaders of companies. We're going to be talking to Linda Denton, a well-respected leader in the field of personal and professional development. But before we get to Linda, if you're listening to our podcast, why weren't you there for the live show? Well, anyhow, thanks for listening to the podcast. While you're there, visit our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out the archives for other older shows with great guests. And if you want to go way back, you can go to our Podbeam site, which has the archives for the last few years. And that's dgefeller.podbeam.com. Well, speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for coaches, CEOs, and HR professionals to interview. So just send me an email at doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, let's start right in. Linda, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
Let me just give you a... little introduction here for our audience. Linda is a fellow coach of mine, and also, I'm happy to say, a friend of mine. She is an avid learner. I've got to share some of this. She has so well credentialed. It's kind of disgusting, Linda. Anyhow, she holds a master's degree in human resources and organizational development from the University of San Francisco. She's certified as a professional coach from the ICF Federation and from the Center for Credentialing and Education. She's active in a variety of nonprofits, including Toastmasters International, where she holds, get this, the Advanced Leader Bronze and is her club and divisional VP of Education. She's served as an adjunct instructor and advisory team member at Chapman University, where she was a co-creator and an instructor for the Coaching Skills for Business Leader Certification Program for Emotional Intelligence for Top Performers, and she taught a graduate class in conflict and negotiation. In addition, she served 10 years as an advisory team member and an adjunct instructor in the Human Resource Management Certification Program at the University of California. Linda comes to us with dual credentials, both as a trained, experienced HR professional, and also as a trained and experienced coach. And Linda, welcome to the Coaching Perspective.
Thank you so much.
I'm glad to have you here today. Well, you know, here's the question I will someday figure out a better way to say, but tell us what you did before, what you're doing now. In other words, what did you do before this?
Great. Thank you for that question. And I have it in two parts because I actually am on my third career. So I'll just give you a quick overview of my first two. So my path to my current business was really jagged, full of surprises and a lot of life lessons. And so it surprises a lot of people to hear that my first career was with the juvenile division of the LA County Probation Department. And at that time, I was interested in helping kids with problems and was thinking of becoming a psychologist. And I worked there while I was completing my graduate degree and had planned on making a career there. And after 7 years of wage freezes, I decided to leave the government and check out the world of business. And then that led me to my second career. And I thought originally I would go into marketing or PR, and was surprised when I was working with a startup company and the president suggested that I go into human resources. What I did with that information then was I decided if I was going to take on this role in a new profession that I would get my graduate degree. And so after that, I spent about 20 years in human resources and organizational learning, really enjoying that profession. I think my favorite part about that profession was getting to work with the leaders and the teams on growing and developing their talent.
Well, you know, it's obvious from what you've done in the past that you are quite a job hopper, you know, 7 years in one place, 20 years in another place. You just can't seem to stay in one place, can you, Linda?
Well, I think those are careers. It wasn't I stayed in one job, especially the 20 years. That was not one job.
Well, and also, you know, looking at today's environment, do you think it really was a good decision to leave government employment?
That's a really good question, and I would say yes and no, because they have really nice pension plans.
Well, there is a benefit there.
Yes, well, I miss that benefit.
Let's leave the past. Tell us a little bit about what your business is today. What do you do? Who do you do it with? What kind of services and products you offer and who your clients are?
Okay. So in 2006, that was when I really recognized that it was time for me to leave and go look for my third career. And at that time, what was really clear to me was that I really enjoyed the coaching. I had business knowledge, and I had some creative skills that I really wanted to carry to a larger audience. I really have to admit, I just crossed my fingers and jumped in to my own business. And I actually picked a specific date so I would always remember, and it was January 15th, 2007. I launched what I refer to as my People Skills Development business. And I was extremely fortunate in that I had corporate clients within 45 days from my business launch.
Wow, and that's amazing.
It was, I have to tell you, though, what was funny was I thought I should have them in 30 days. So 45 days was good. And then what I did after that is my corporate clients actually hired me to help develop the capabilities of their high-potential leaders and teams, including building self-awareness, communication, and conflict management skills. And then I'm also hired by small business owners to work with them as business startups, right-sizing, and mergers.
So give us an example, Linda. In the last, let's say, couple of years, mm-hmm. what's the smallest size company and what's the largest size company you've worked with?
Well, the largest, I wasn't ready for that question. The smallest was about $4 million, and that was a nonprofit that I took over the lead in that organization and did the right sizing. The largest was one of our Fortune 100 companies in Orange County.
Wow, that's quite a swing.
That is quite a swing.
Is it a big challenge to work with leaders in organizations that are that different in terms of size?
Oh, that is such a good question. I don't think so. I think the challenges that leaders have in managing, leading people, and keeping an eye on the business results is the same regardless of the size of the company.
You know, I think my own experience would kind of back that up. I would say that probably the biggest difference is in the resources that they have available to implement plans, not so much in that their problems are different.
Yes. Yeah, I would agree.
So your ideal client today is what?
Well, my ideal client is a leader or a team that is struggling. And I would say they're trying to shift from where they are right now to a higher performance positioning. So with senior leaders, it typically is they notice that they need to do something different to go that next step, to grow into that next position.
How long would you say your typical engagement is?
Most of the clients I work for, we start out at the 6-month mark. They typically run anywhere from 8 months to 2 years.
And here's the question that everybody always wants to know. What do you do to get your clients? What's your marketing secret? You know, what's Linda Denton's secret sauce for getting this great list and variety of clients?
That is another good question. So I'm just sitting here trying to think, what is it I do? So a lot of my clients come from name recognition. And so a lot of the different companies knew me when I was internal in human resources, or they know me from the nonprofit work that I do. And so it's all pretty much by referral.
How about Toastmasters? Is that a referral source, or is that just a learning experience for you yourself?
Well, it could be a referral source, I suppose. But for me, it's just strictly because I want to develop my speaking skills, and it's so much fun. So Thursday mornings are my creative fun time.
And now Thursday afternoon is your creative fun
now,
time.
That's true.
Well, look, this is a question. Before I move on, was there anything else you wanted to say about your current business before we go to the next question?
Well, I think the only thing I would add is just like when I was internal in human resources and organization development, my clients are in a broad industries. And so my work has been everything from healthcare, retail, education, high tech, all the way to, I did have a client for almost 2 years that was a boutique wine industry. Really broad, just like the organizations I worked internally with.
My favorite question that I like to ask all of our guests, and we get different answers every single time, is what's your guiding principle? And by that, I mean, what experience did you have in life that sort of said, this is my true north, this is my guiding principle, this is my number one value, however you want to explain it. What is it that you would say typifies you in that area?
Can I have four?
Sure.
Okay, good.
Wonderful.
I really had to think about this, this whole idea of guiding principle. What I realized was the first one is optimism. Being optimistic enables me to work with my clients with a positive attitude and a total belief in my clients' ability to succeed, even in the face of very difficult circumstances or adversity. And I would say I not only apply that to my clients, and I'm very aware when my optimism isn't as strong, it definitely impacts me personally, and I think it would it impacts my clients. So that's the first one. The second one is curiosity. I also could call that being nosy, but I'm really, really curious. And I'm curious about people. I'm curious about learning. I'm curious about life. That enables me to engage again with my clients because I really want to understand them. I love asking questions, and I think the curiosity helps my clients dig deeper and learning more about the topic that we're discussing. So that's the second one. And then the third one is perseverance. So in my coaching, I really spend a lot of time encouraging my clients to stick with new behavior despite the difficulty of making desired change. And by me sticking with them during their process, I think that modeling then enables my clients as leaders to go out and be able to do the same thing with their teams. And then the last one is integrity, which is huge for me. Really, when I think about integrity, I realize at the end of the day, my word is all I have. And especially working in coaching, if I tell my client that I am not going to divulge confidence, I better follow through. I better keep my word. And the only exception I have to that, which I'm very clear with my clients on, is if there's some sort of legal concern that comes out during the coaching, which has only happened once the whole time I've been coaching. So those are my four biggies.
Well, again, you've kept our record intact by not only not duplicating anything, but by adding four rather than the usual one or two. So thank you. And I can vouch for the importance of curiosity with you. You are almost a difficult person to have a conversation with because you are so curious about everything that the other people are saying that it's like we just aren't going to have enough time. And I say that as a compliment.
Oh, good. Thanks.
So let's talk a little bit about challenges. What do you see as the challenges in coaching executives? How is it different from anybody else? What's unique about it?
From my experience in working with executives, I think there's three challenges that I notice or I'm aware of with, and this in particular is the highest level that you're working with, and that is the more senior the executive, the more that's at stake. So I am so aware of the challenges of coaching a very senior level person and what's at stake for them professionally. I just feel this total sense of being responsible with the executive, and that any missteps that happen during the coaching can have pretty significant consequences. So that's one thing. Just there's just more at stake than there is if I'm working with a mid-level manager. Another point is time pressures. So the more senior the leader, the more time pressure they feel, and the more conflict in making time for the coaching and for any change in behavior that, as a coach, I know would help this executive be more successful. So there's more at stake, time pressure. And then I think leaders, senior leaders like most people, don't change unless they have a compelling reason to do so. So I look at that third point is that compelling reason. And this could be anything from an opportunity to expand or move up in the organization, or very often I'm working with people that are have the threat of their losing their job. And unfortunately, to me, the threat of a job loss doesn't necessarily translate into sustained change.
Linda, let me ask you a question on those things. They could be interpreted in a number of different ways. Let me mm-hmm. give you a choice. Are these issues, and is your coaching with senior executives more geared towards their problems or more geared towards improvement?
I would say both, and I'm saying that because, say, for example, the time pressures, compelling reason, and something being at stake, I think that can be interpreted as a positive. The fact that the senior executive is willing to take the time, understands that it takes time to make the change, they have a reason to do so, can be positive. But I think that I hear what you're saying, that these also could be related to the problem that the executive mm-hmm. is having.
And I just asked that because, you know, yeah. so many people assume that coaching is all problem oriented and that if you don't have a problem, there's no reason to have a coach. And yet from what you're saying, I'm sure that much of the coaching that you're doing is not necessarily to solve a problem, but to help improve a future situation.
Yes, it is. And it's really what most of the coaching I'm doing is looking at high-performance people, moving them further in their career. So a lot of the coaching I'm doing is with high potentials also. So, but even working with high potential, they still need to, when people are so busy at work, they need to be able to have a reason to take the time and do the work that needs to happen when you're in a change process. And then yeah. what's at stake for them is this reward, you know, the reward of being able to move to that next level.
You know, I liken it to, you know, remedial training and this kind of a futuristic point of view, or as you would probably call it, the performance development, mm-hmm. which, you know, obviously you are so strong in, your website has so much information on it. It really seems like your focus is very much forward oriented with your clients.
Yes, very, very future focused. And I don't spend as little time as possible on past issues. It's all about what can we do now and then go forward.
All right. Before I move on to our next question, I know you had a couple of good examples to share with us today. I just want to make sure that interrupt me when it's appropriate to share those stories with us. And
I have one now.
All
so
right.
I have.
I must be psychic.
Yeah, I think you are. So this is, I want to share a little short overview of a senior level top male executive I worked with in a healthcare organization. And this, I was brought in to coach this person. He managed a critical function that was impacting a brand new product. And I was brought in because he was struggling with his leadership of the team. And there was concern from the organization that his inability to lead the team would result in missing the product launch, which would have had a huge impact on the organization's revenue. So my job was to provide support to him and his team so that they all could achieve the goals that were set out for them. And this was an interesting coaching situation for me in that I actually spent hours with this individual, attending executive and team planning sessions, collecting feedback on a regular basis from his team and the senior leaders working around him, and then working with him on developing his self-awareness and communication skills. I worked with this individual for just over a year. He worked so hard. It was so amazing to see the changes he was willing to make, just the tremendous strides that he took to make these changes. And we ended the coaching. And then, unfortunately, 6 months after we stopped coaching, he was terminated. What I really became very clear on was, in this particular situation, the intervention to help him was too late to change the perception of the executive team. So he had already, there was already a perception that he was really more of a problem in the organization, and once he hit the mark that he had been working on, then they let him go. So it was really a great learning experience for me, as well, I'm sure, as for my client at the time, about perception.
I'm glad you shared that with us because, you know, it's not always about just coaching the client. I mean, we, in this case, you coached the client made the changes. Obviously, looking back on it, what should have been included in the coaching were some of the other people whose perceptions needed to be changed.
Yeah, I think you're right. In addition, one of the, I noticed this even when I was internally, that a lot of times once a perception has been made that a, somebody in leadership is more of a detriment than a positive to the organization, it's very difficult to change that perception.
Yeah, it is. Well, look, Linda, we're going to take a break at this point for just a short commercial, and then we'll be right back with some more fascinating discussion. Thank you very much. Don't go away.
Can we talk about your family business? You know, that thing you put your whole life's blood, sweat, and tears into? Well, what happens when you retire or try and pass that business on to your children? At Succession Strategies, we can help you find the answers. We'll guide you through the unsettling process of protecting your family legacy and successfully passing your business on to the next generation, safely and securely, ensuring that it'll both survive and thrive for generations to come. So ask yourself just one question. Can I really afford to wait? Take the first step. Take our complimentary self-assessment at successionstrategies.com or call us at 714-560-9022 to set up a free consultation at your convenience. That's succession-strategies.com.
I got stuff to the right, more stuff to the left. Got enough stuff, but I can't take a step. So I smart stopped and took a minute to think. I need a little better spot, not under the sink. With smart stop, I leave the stress at the door, cause it's the smarter way to store.
Smart stop bucks the system. Your first month's rent is just a buck. Your next 3 months are half off. Call 888-97-STORAGE and mention this station.
Goodbye clutter, hello floors. Smart stop, the smarter way to store.
And now back to Doug and his guest.
Okay, we're talking to Linda Dent, experienced HR professional and experienced coach, and we're talking about some of the lessons learned from coaching leaders. Linda, thank you very much for being with us. I'm really enjoying this conversation.
Oh, thank you.
What are some of the key lessons that you've learned from coaching leaders?
Well, I have a couple here. And so one of the lessons that I have learned is just how critical it is to educate leaders on self-awareness and how self-awareness impacts their overall success as leaders. So in my experience working with leaders, I have seen that it's important that coaching needs to be seen, and this really relates to what we were talking about earlier, as a resource to high-performance leadership than to fix someone. That's definitely one learning. The other one is that senior leaders are often lacking in accurate and honest feedback, and I have seen this over and over and over with the leaders I've worked with. And so it's just so clear to me that without feedback, that leaders often make decisions without all the pertinent information. A lot of the missteps that leaders have in organizations is due to people not giving them feedback or being afraid of them.
Can I just interrupt you on that one for a minute?
Yeah.
Honest feedback, I agree. Huge problem. How does the boss get honest feedback?
Well, this is where the coach can come in, to be honest with you. I think that the coach can work with the leader to encourage them to reach out to individuals in their team and the organization to get honest and what I like to refer to as unfiltered feedback. Because really, without that, I don't see how most leaders can be successful over time. They can in a short period, but not over time. Right now, there's a lot of research that's been written about minorities and women get the least amount of feedback in organizations, and they struggle the most with people being honest with them.
You know, the reason I asked, and I love the way you answered the question there, is because so many times I hear leaders saying, people don't tell me the truth, as if it was their responsibility, as if they should automatically tell them the truth, and that the leaders don't accept the responsibility of them doing the work to create the environment to encourage the honest feedback. That's
exactly
kind of what I heard you saying there. Is that right?
Exactly.
And that's where your coaching is really focused, is in creating that environment, getting the leader to learn how to encourage people to open up.
And I'll just give you a funny example just on myself. So when I was in leadership in my last position, I was a senior vice president in a company, and I decided to switch it up with my team. And at their performance reviews, without giving them any heads up, as they came in and we did the review, I said to them, do you want to give me feedback? And no one gave me any feedback. They just looked at me like a deer in the headlights and were like, I'm not going to say anything, because I didn't lay any foundation. I didn't prep them or anything. And it was a huge lesson I learned that then I was able to carry over into my coaching.
Well, I didn't mean to interrupt you there. Were there some other lessons that you wanted to share?
Yeah, I had just one other one, is that most senior leaders face challenges with ongoing communication and managing conflict. I could say that, I threw a crazy percentage out, 80% of the people I work with, communication and being able to engage people in conflict comes up every single time. And so this is also a place I think the coach can really help the leader, is to work with them to improve their communication skills and help them see conflict as part of just doing business rather than negative behavior.
In the area of lessons learned, what have you learned about yourself and your coaching skills? You suggested that question, and I just looked at, I don't know that I want anybody to ask me that question.
Well, I think it's helpful. So, I don't have any problem sharing this. So when I was first introduced to coaching, and I started coaching in 1994, and I really relied on assessments and resources because I happen to be someone that loves assessments. But I looked at them as a powerful part of the coaching. And what I have learned over time is that there's a bigger value in my presence and developing the presence of a coach. From this, then, I've been able to develop the skills of really being there for my client, really listening to my client, hearing what their needs are, and then asking questions. And those questions usually provoke new insights and thinking. So rather than relying on the assessment to tell me something, I rely on the client to tell me something, which was a big shift for me. It's made the coaching process far more richer. And then through that process, I was able to see that really that the change takes place through dialogue, not through the assessment or the resources. Now, those can help, but that's not where the change takes place. It takes place in the dialogue and the skill the coach has in engaging in the dialogue. And that was just a huge shift for me.
Well, you know, I love the way you phrase that. I, too, believe assessments have a value, but they don't take care of everything. But what I really liked about your comment there was the emphasis on dialogue rather than the emphasis being on just listening. So mm-hmm. many times I hear coaches talk about, well, coaching is just about listening. And listening without dialogue, I don't think is very effective. And that's what I kind of hear you getting at. Is that right?
Exactly. So it's really active listening, which is engaging in dialogue. So actually it's the conversation, it's the coaching conversation between the client and the coach, with the coach really taking the lead at hearing where there needs to be a question asked. And then the skill when you're fully present is how to ask a question that really provokes a shift in the client. And this is, for me, just ongoing learning. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed even this year another shift in my coaching skills as I move again to that place of using more of my presence and more of a mind of curiosity as I'm engaging with the client.
Okay, that takes care of the dialogue. How about what else have you learned about yourself and your coaching skills?
Let me think about that for just one nanosecond. So, well, I guess the big thing is I'm glad I didn't go in to be a psychologist when I thought I was years and years ago, because what I love about coaching is that dialogue. It's the most amazing place to hang out for me. And I never leave a coaching session where I don't learn something. And so I think that's another thing that I just love about coaching, is that when you're engaged with really smart people working on a project together, there's mutual learning and just this beautiful dialogue that emerges and learning that emerges from the conversation. So I think for me, it's learning to hold back my comments, my knowledge longer, and letting it emerge first with the client.
So that's always a challenge, especially for an experienced business person like yourself, to stay in the coaching mode and not step into the consulting mode. Mm-hmm. Or at least not step in too quickly. Tell me how tough you are as a coach with your clients. And how does that work for you?
How tough?
How tough? How demanding are you as a coach?
Oh, boy, that's really a good question. How demanding?
Let me use a nicer word. Accountability would be probably the coaching terminology, but, you know, I'm kind of a rough around the edges guy. I'm going to say, how demanding are you that they really do what they say they're going to do?
That really, I like that question. Okay, so I don't take ownership for the result. I feel like in the coaching, I'm there to support the client and to work with them through the process of developing this behavior or this change that they want to make that they identify as important for them. So first, my client's identifying what's important for them and what they want me to do with them. But I don't own the result. I've learned a long time ago that when a client resists making a change, that is a very interesting place to hang out with the client for a while, because the learning is extremely rich as to why they decided they're not going to do something. I don't know that I'm so tough, but I always know how to come back to what they wanted.
Okay, so you don't let them get away with just ignoring taking action.
No.
No. You bring it back to, if you're not going to take action, why are you not taking action, sort of dialogue.
Yes, so when they come back to me, for example, and they're complaining about the same thing over and over, at a coaching session, they came up with a plan and then talked about what this plan was going to look like and how they were going to apply it. Then a few weeks later, they come back and they're talking about the same issue and having not applied it. Then I want to hang out with them and wonder, so how that works for them by not making the change.
Nice way of putting it.
Yeah, it's been asking that question with, okay, so your decision of not making the change, so how's that working?
Well, look, Linda, we're about to run out of time, so let me ask you this. Is there anything else about you or your firm that we've not talked about today, or that I sort of talked over or got you off track that you want to cover now?
No. I feel like this is very thorough.
You know, our audience should know that usually before we go on the air, I've always met with the guest, and we've kind of worked out in general some questions, some areas to talk about. But I have this bad habit of getting curious once they start talking and asking questions that we've never discussed. So for that, I apologize.
Oh, I loved it. No, it's good. I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Now, how does someone get in touch with you or learn more about your firm?
Well, my website is my name. It's lindadenton.com. On Facebook, my Facebook page is a People Development Company. I'm on Twitter, Linda_Denton, and I'm on LinkedIn as Linda Denton. No problem remembering my company name.
How much time do you spend a week on social media?
A lot. a lot. I can't give you an exact time. It depends on the day, but I'm on social media a lot.
Well, look, Linda, thank you very much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to meet with us tonight and to talk about lessons learned from coaching. And welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show community.
Thank you so much.
Have a great evening.
Okay, you too, Doug. Thank you.
All right.
Bye.
Well, we've been talking to Linda Denton about coaching lessons learned, coaching leaders. If you just tuned in for some reason, maybe the next show's interesting, go back and listen to this. We'll get it up on the website early next week, and it was a fascinating interview. If you don't have anything to do tonight, last minute, tonight is the Orange County chapter of the ICF coaching group meeting at the Wyndham Hotel. Mike Brenhaug is going to be sharing some inspiring success stories on how to execute a sales strategy with high confidence and great results. And speaking of things coming up, we have a great show for you next week. Sylvia Becker-Hill is going to talk on mastering change with brain alignment. Boy, this one is going to be interesting. Sylvia is so smart, I'm not even sure I understand how smart she is. But this is going to be a great show, great topic. Sylvia has spoken all over the country and all over the world, is back in the U.S. after spending much time abroad. So be sure to tune in next week to listen to that show and look at our weekly newsletter, which comes out Thursday mornings, to find out more about the guests. And if you're not getting the weekly newsletter, then, you know, drop me an email, doug@thecoachingperspective.com. Well, this is Doug Gefeller signing off. I hope you've enjoyed the show today, that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use right now to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with your host, Master Certified Business Coach, Doug DeFeller.